Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a brief but annoying message to let you know that you could have first heard this episode 9 months ago if you were a subscriber to our Iron Filing Society Patreon offering.
For the price of a pint and a St. Clement's each month, you can get up to 4 episodes a week, 9 months before the rest of the world gets them. Early access to regular episodes, lots of other marvellous benefits, and there's absolutely no adverts or brief but annoying messages like this that will get right on your tics.
Find out more and subscribe now at tftimemachine.com/ironfilings.
Here we go. 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 This is it.
This is Tough Life Time Machine. I am Andy Dawson. Pow, pow, pow.
I'm Sam Delaney. So what?
So the third part of the Owen Odyssey. We're looking at Michael Owen's quite recent autobiography, Reboot.
I'm enjoying it.
Have you gone back in and sort of read the whole thing again? Or do you mean you're enjoying the podcast?
No, you know, like,
life?
I read it a while back, but we were, and it was sort of, at the time, while I was reading it, I was saying to you, we've got to do it. Yeah. But then by the time we came to do it, I'd sort of forgotten what was good about it.
Right.
Okay. So, and then I got nervous and thought maybe it wasn't as good as I remember, but I'm really enjoying it, mate. I mean, the thing is, apart from anything else, it plunges us straight back. The bit we're reading plunges us straight back, bang into the 90s, doesn't it?
Which is your favourite time ever.
It's not quite Euro 96, like, it's the mid-90s that obviously were the best time ever.
Mm-hmm.
But this is, like, France 98 was still pretty good. They were still good times. It reminds me of a time when I was still, you know, relatively carefree, happy-go-lucky, freewheeling Sam Delaney.
Yeah.
Breezing through life.
Arguably the best Sam Delaney.
Yeah.
But, I mean, different fans of yours will probably have different eras of which they're
like
most
Bowie,
fond.
Like Bowie, you mean?
Yeah.
Like Bowie.
Yeah, so, I mean, some of your fans will be into the freewheeling late 90s. Some of your fans will be into the more thoughtful...
the acoustic years.
Yeah, you're at now.
That's what I'm at now, yeah. But for some people, they find it boring. Mm. But other people go, yeah, I mean, it's less immediately accessible. but there's certainly more depth.
There's layers to the work, which you really need to try and explore.
There's layers to me now, that's true. But back then, I was just, you know, I was, everything was there. I was an open book.
Brash,
and
cocky.
I'll be honest,
yeah,
there
was
wasn't much
there.
Depth. Yeah. You know, it was all just about having fun all the time.
But there was a lot of adrenaline. It was exciting.
Yeah. Some of the adrenaline natural, some artificial.
But yeah, different Delaney's for different people, isn't it? Where
France 98 was a great time. Where were you in France 98? Were you up the hour price in those days?
Nah, I'd finished the hour price. I was freelance writing and not really earning very much money. So I was back at my parents' rig.
Right,
I'd moved that a few years before, and I had a flat. I had to give that up in order to give
you
up the hour price.
Parental rig.
In order to follow the dream of writing for fucking the NME and Lord now and again.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Do you have fond memories of watching the France 98 World Cup?
Yeah, I mean, I say I was a bit skint, but I was earning enough to enjoy, an exciting lifestyle.
Right.
An alcohol-fueled lifestyle, which tied in perfectly with France 98,
Yeah, it did, didn't it?
But
I remember my brothers and my best mate all went off to watch England versus Tunisia in Marseille. And I had a job, but I sort of was skinned. I couldn't afford it. I dropped out quite last minute from the whole fucking project, right? And obviously I was really torn about it. And on the day they all went, I was so gutted. It was my best mate. He'd tagged along with my three older brothers. And I think a couple of other lads who we were mates with as well had gone. And they all trained it. down to Marseille.
Nice.
And the train itself just sounded like fucking bedlam. Because you know what? It was half English fans and half Scotland fans all on the fucking same train.
Right.
So it was a bit crazy. But
you've touched upon this before. Did Cass not get involved quite deeply on this train?
Yeah. It was like they'd all made an arrangement to pace themselves.
That's right, yeah.
But by the time they hadn't even yet hit the south coast when two of my brothers were singing. I can't remember what those. They were doing all that come and have a go if you think you're hard enough, which is a fucking stupid thing to sing at Scots. Because I would say that the response from most Scots would be,
okay,
we know we're hard enough.
Here we come.
Yeah, this is we're good. Coming. Come ahead, big man. Let's have a square go. We don't on think this, we're hard enough. We fucking know.
Yeah, on this confined space of a train. Where there is literally no escape.
No, my mate actually did get... he was in a train rig. And you were thrown in randomly. And obviously everyone was paralytic on this train. And he had to get up in the night. He was on a top bunk. And he got up, woke up pissed off his nut. Needed a piss. Sort of tried to climb out of the bed. Slipped. And on his way down, kicked the Scotsman in the face who was sleeping. And the Scotsman, without hesitation, in one motion, woke up and punched him in the face. But then they fucking got to Marseille, and that was when the real trouble started, because it was, I don't even remember, the Battle of Marseille, when all the local Tunisians and other, like, sort of North African community, they fucking just ran all of the England fans all around the streets for 24 hours. It was absolute fucking bedlam. They were just running and hiding for, like, you know. So anyway, I remember, because I remember being really gutted on the day they left that I wasn't going. Mm-hmm. And then within a few hours, when the news started coming through about how it was a fucking war zone.
Yeah.
I was really chuffed. I had no concern whatsoever for their safety. I was just really happy. I was congratulating myself for not being there. Yeah, good times.
Yeah. Before we go any further, I should point out that I think I've come down with the coronavirus, and I'm in a bad way. So my contribution to this one might be a little bit more laboured than usual.
Well, I'll try. You might die. We were just discussing that before we started recording. You might die. And as we've discussed before about death and coronavirus death in particular, if you do, you do. Doesn't matter, does it?
Yeah. And if I do, it'd be nice to have it sort of logged for posterity on a podcast.
If you're listening to this, treasure it, because this will be worth, this episode will be worth a lot of money in years to come, because it could go down as the Andy Dawson Memorial Podcast.
Yeah,
on the last ever pod.
Could be very valuable on the second hand podcast. So keep hold of it.
I don't know if you're the sort of person who like downloads podcasts but then deletes them when you finish listening, or they don't even download, you stream them, which I think is problematic for us financially. I think for our data, it's better if people download, I think.
Yeah.
But anyway, this one, definitely fucking download, because it could be Andy's last.
This one might even come out on a 7-inch single. Who knows? The final Death Throes could come out as a 7-inch for Record Store Day. Or Podcast Store Day, whichever works for both, doesn't it?
And think how shit it's going to be when I have to replace Andy with Anthea Turner on Top Flight Time Machine. You know?
I guess so, yeah.
You'll all be gutted.
It'll not be the same, it'll be different, but it'll probably still work, I think, but in different ways.
If you do die, what is the situation with Top Flight Time Machine? Do you want me to shut it down, or am I allowed to draft in someone new?
No, I'd like you to do whatever you feel is right.
I'll definitely draft in someone new then, no hesitation.
Within the week.
I want to tell you that now. I think it's fair that you know, because I want to... Yeah, there might be an initial drop-off in listeners, and maybe we'll be able to rebuild, I don't know. But the important thing for me is that I continue to have, this continues to serve as a revenue stream for me.
For you personally,
irrespective of your state, whether living or dead. I mean, of course, contribute some of it to your kids.
That'll be good. That'll be helpful. A small amount.
Because, you know, you'll still own some of the IP.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you know what I mean?
I mean, you could bring in, as a caretaker podcaster, you could bring in ResultsBot for maybe a week or two while you
do a
hunt for a full-time replacement. But, you know, that's not going to be ideal,
is it? Who's the best caretaker people out there? I mean, you're looking at your Howard Wilkinsons.
Yeah.
Your Stuart Pearces, your Gus Van Hiddinks of
Tony
this world.
Tony Parks was always the king of the caretakers of Blackburn, wasn't he? And then they gave him the job.
And at Arsenal, it was always Stuart Houston.
Yes.
I wonder if he's still going.
Could be, yeah.
Hello, Stuart. Yeah, it's Sam Delaney here from Top Light Time Machine. I've got a great gig for you.
Newcastle, of course, had John Carver. Do you remember him?
John Carver actually got the job at one point eventually,
yeah.
Because Mike actually just couldn't be bothered interviewing anyone else.
And it all went exactly the way we thought it would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Caretaker managers.
Shall we look at this Michael Owen thing then?
Yeah.
So where we're at, it's the Argentina game, isn't it? It's that memorable match. And he says, I can't remember what was the thing that we'd done previously. Did we talk about the goal?
No, not yet.
In the last one?
No.
Because it's a few would argue that Roberto Ayala is one of the best defenders we've seen in world football in recent years. Yet on the build-up to our second goal that night in St Etienne, a world-class defender found himself in a position that just beggars belief. This was only because of what I'd done to the defence a few minutes earlier. I'd scared them.
Yeah.
And he had. And it was because he ran at the defence and he'd won that penalty. As he said on the previous page, I was so confident about what I could do, I just thought, I'll run past you. And that was it. That was what he was doing. He was just running as fast as he can with the ball and then having a shot. And he had a good shot on him.
Yeah. Well, but like I said in the last episode, he'd practiced every type of shot possible
in his garden
for years since he was a young boy.
Yeah.
So he knew that he could shoot from any angle in any situation. And you combine that with his electric pace and he was quite literally unstoppable.
Yeah, he was. It was fucking great, wasn't it?
Yeah. For England to have a player like that was so exciting. Because you looked at him, you thought, and he's right, before he scored the goal, he had done exactly the same thing to them already, right?
Yeah.
And he'd done it in the other games, and you had this sense, which is rare in the history of English football, we had a player who was unplayable.
Mm. I guess
it wasn't like Gazza, who, you know, in his prime, could pull strings from midfield and sometimes pull something out of the hat. You know, you could still mark Gazza. You could still irritate him or anger him or get a book in or whatever. And plus, you know, I think there's only so much you can do in the centre of the pitch. We had a player who was unplayable and who, whatever team we came up against, they had to shape all of their tactics around his existence. And even then, they still might not stand a chance of stopping him from scoring. It was a brief moment. And that's why the story of this game is so sad. It's such a one of the, you know, sort of defining tragedies of the England team, this game that we're talking about now. Because had we got through, had we won on penalties or won in 90 minutes, I think we could have gone on, like, got to the final that year.
Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, we'll never know, will we? But, of course, the other big star of this tournament was Ronaldo, wasn't he, for Brazil?
That's true.
Who was doing similar kind of stuff.
Very similar.
He was fast, but he was stronger as well.
Ronaldo was a better player than Michael Owen, I think.
Yeah, Owen was kind of like, oh, well, a sort of smaller version of Ronaldo. But
Ronaldo was a complete player, wasn't he?
Yeah. I don't know if we would have won the tournament.
Even he had an epileptic fit before the final, so, everyone's got their problems.
Well, exactly, but then Brazil didn't win it, did they? France won it, and that France team was fucking incredible.
It was really good, but what a final that would have been had Ronaldo. I mean, as it happens, France just fucking wiped Brazil out in that final, which was a shock, really, because Brazil were the reigning champs, and no one thought France had never won it before, so no one really thought France were going to win it. And of course, the thing about that France team is you can still probably name all of them.
Yeah.
Because they all dominated Champions League football for years as well, didn't they? And a huge number of them played in the Premier League and won the Premier League for various clubs. It was an amazing team, but it always lacked a centre-forward, didn't it?
It did. Who did they have? They had Givosh, didn't they, was the centre-forward.
He signed for Newcastle.
Newcastle, yeah, and was shit there as well.
He was absolute shit. So they lacked a centre-forward. Brazil were a really, really good team, and they had a brilliant centre-forward who was probably the best player in the tournament up until that
point.
But
he collapsed.
But the stress got too much for him.
Mm.
And don't forget, one of my periods in Sam Delaney history is, of course, epileptic.
Epilepsy Delaney, yeah.
And I have had stress-triggered epis before,
So
I knew how the cunt felt, where it's just all got too much. I was exhausted, I was under mental strain, emotional strain, and I've ended up in hospital. Bang! Where am I? You've had an epi, mate.
You're in the hospital. You're up the hospital. Fuck.
You're up the Aussie.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, fucking hell, I've done a Ronaldo again.
It's quite a niche period, that, in terms of your fan base. You don't find many fans who say, my favourite period of Delaney was Epi Delaney. But, there you go.
But it was exciting, because there's so much drama with Epi Delaney.
Drama, jeopardy, uncertainty.
There was, because you never knew if you were going to die.
Jalapeño.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Jalapeño.
I mean, some of the fucking epi episodes I had were so terrifying. Once I woke up in Kingston Hospital, right, and I'd fallen over and had an epi in a driveway, and I'd smashed my head on a wall as I'd gone down. So I had a bad head injury, right, stitches in my head, and I'd had an epi.
Yeah.
And when I woke up, I was in the cardiac arrest ward. And there was all these old men in there who were like had fucking heart attacks, and I sort of was bewildered. I was like, "What the fuck? What's going on? Where am I?" And they've gone, "Do you know what one bloke said to me?" He goes, "Well, it looks, young man, like you've had a fight and had a heart attack." And I've gone, "What?" And I knew I'd been at West Ham the day before. I'd been at West Ham Derby. And I had vague memories about what took place. I was like highly inebriated, and in various ways when it had happened. And I went, "What?" And he goes, "You've had a fight." He goes, "It happens a lot." He's there, this old cunt with fucking all the things on his chest, like he thinks you always get some cunt who thinks he's the doctor,
self-appointed doctor. Yeah,
because there's no doctor. And he goes, "Yeah, what's happened is it happens sometimes. You've been fighting, and in the middle of the fight, you've had a heart attack."
And that's why you're in here.
I must have lost quite badly if someone's punched me so hard I had a heart attack. And but I said, "No way, mate. Neither of those things have happened. No way." And he was laughing, going, "Oh, well, that's what they all say." What a cunt.
I've been in here seven heart attacks in the last 7 years. I've seen
There's always
all,
a young
mate.
Rascal like you. Claims they haven't been fighting and had a heart attack, even though they obviously have. I got out of bed, and to my surprise, I had one of those bumless gowns on.
Oh, they're the worst.
I was like, oh, God, hey, it just fucking hell. Just as you thought things couldn't get any worse, I've got a bumless gown on.
Yeah.
They've put me in the night.
How am I supposed to go to the bog with this on?
Yeah. I fucking shuffled over to the payphone, called up my older brother.
Clutching what material there was around your arse to try and maintain your dignity.
Yeah, exactly, but it was hopeless. And, my head, I went into the bathroom, and sure enough, the bloke said, you've been fighting. And I had blood all over my head and stitches in it, and I did look a mess. And I thought, well, maybe he's right. But I thought, nah, I'd remember either of those things, I'd remember. But I called up my brother. I said, look, you better come and get me. I'm in Kingston Hospital. Some old bloke's just told me I had a fight and a heart attack.
I've got no reason to doubt him.
Yeah, but it turned out I'd been smoking a spliff, and on top of a day of excitement and, you know, drinking and all the rest of
had
it.
Had you had some drug powders and some drug tablets and then a spliff?
I'd had a drug cigarette. That's all I'd had, I think. And loads of alcohol drinks. I'd had 9 or 10 alcohol drinks.
Then
some drug cigarettes. And I just suddenly, my head started spinning. And I did the thing, instead of telling my mates, I went, lads, I'll catch you up in a minute. I'm just going for a wee. And I looked for somewhere to hide, like the Hulk does when he's turning into Hulk.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Because I thought, I'm going there. Or sometimes cats hide when they're going to die.
They do. They
and they get in a cupboard, don't they?
Stuff, yeah.
And I went, don't worry. And I walked into a driveway. We were walking down a residential street, and I walked into the gravel driveway of quite a posh house.
Right.
And my mates carried on for about another 10 yards and just sort of thought, hang on, that was a bit weird. What the fuck's he doing?
So has they gone off to die? Back.
They walked in. Yeah, it was like I'd gone off to die. You go ahead, man.
He's probably just gone off to die. I'd better keep walking.
Yeah, he wants his privacy, and we should respect that. It's like, you know, the Red Indians do that, and all they just disappear off into the plains.
I don't want him to feel like I'm violating him in his moment of death.
He wants to die in peace and let his spirit leave his body and float up into the heavens, and that's not something he wants us to see. Besides, the pubs will be closing soon, so if we don't get a shift on, we're going to miss last orders. And they came back around the corner, and I just fucking stacked it, smashed my head in, and had an epileptic fit. That's just one of my epileptic incidents. There's loads of them, and it was always scary. So some people, like Bowie, would you say that's my Bowie's Berlin period?
I would say probably Station to Station.
Right.
Just before the Berlin, because he cleaned up for Berlin, didn't he? At Station to Station was when he was kind of at his most crazed.
Station when he was on the old drug heroin.
Yeah.
The drug
station,
injections.
Station was that's probably epilepsy Delaney, yeah.
He did that famous song, didn't he? Drug injection.
Yeah.
On Station to Station. Drug injection. Pulsing through my veins.
Yeah. I've fallen over and hit a wall with my head.
The old man said I'd had a heart attack
again and again and again. Michael,
I'm
anyway.
Wearing a bumless gown in Kingston.
Yeah, that was it. He did that to it, didn't he? He turned up in at Victoria Station in that car, and he stood up wearing a bumless gown.
Nobody
ever seen anyone do that before. And then he gave a fucking Nazi salute and drove off. Yeah.
GTFN dickheads.
Yeah. We might have to do the boy odyssey at some point.
Get your knot round that. GTFN.
We might need to do the boy odyssey at some point, Sam.
Yeah.
Album by album. The boy story. I'm into that. I'm well into that.
That's a good idea.
Where are we? Mike Alone. Where the fuck are we at? Yeah, so Ayala, I'd scared them. Funnily enough, as the goal sequence developed when Bex's pass reached me inside the opposition half, my first thought was to keep the ball and potentially link play. Then I thought, fuck it.
Fuck that. I'm going to try and score. And a score a fucking worldie.
My dear Ken says that. He says, then, when I looked up and saw what was in front of me, my eyes lit up. Everything changed. Unsettled by what had transpired a few minutes previously, the Argentinian defenders must have thought they couldn't just squeeze up on me again. Instead, backs to goal, they just gave me a run on them. They literally had no idea how to cope with this cunt.
Nah.
Play broke down into something you might see in a school playground. No structure, assignments lost. In truth, they had no chance. I would have run past them all, even if I'd been slow. Oh! He's unbeatable.
Even if I had all the pace of Paul Merson, who was sat gawping at me from the bench.
This is cocaine Owen, isn't it?
Yeah.
I could have scored even if I was slow. I could do anything.
I could have scored a goal on the moon. If I wanted to, I could run so fast that I'd fly up to the moon and score a goal there.
in a backless gown. I was thinking they're sitting ducks, he said. Initially, the shape of Jose Chamo came into the corner of my eye. In a split second, I thought, he's too close to me. He was cheating, edging, gambling, hoping he could nick it or use his strength to put me off. He had underestimated my pace too.
They all had. All of them.
I was indestructible.
At that one moment, I, Michael Owen, was the most powerful human on earth.
Yeah. He says, I felt he was in the wrong position. If I took a good touch, I could just run away from him. I made an instinctive decision. I used the outside of my foot and took that touch. I wriggled free of him. And it was then, when I lifted my head again, that I thought one thing. Oh my God, goal!
Yeah. I love that. He knew. He fucking knew, didn't he?
Yeah.
Because in an instant, he could assess all of the angles.
Like Terminator.
Yeah.
Well, that stuff going on in his head.
Yeah.
All the data.
Yeah, and it was situation. All spilling through his mind, being processed in milliseconds. And he thought, goal, it's all happening now.
And he said, bizarrely, at no point in any of this did I feel any pressure whatsoever.
Great.
He just had a state of serenity, basically, because he knew what was
That's
coming.
Like us before we go on stage in our live shows, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we just know that whatever we do out there, it's going to be incredible. And the fans
sometimes
are just
you just
respond.
Look at the audience. We stand backstage, you look at the audience, and you look at me, and you just nod and say, goal.
Yeah. So we just go out there and do it. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Goal. They've left us too much space. They've underestimated our banter again.
We're going right through them. This is going to be over in 10 seconds. Then he says, regardless of the enormity of the stage, because I'd rehearsed every conceivable way of scoring goals throughout my young life, as you said.
Yeah.
What could have been a nerve-wracking do-or-die moment was reduced to just familiar routine. I went into automatic mode.
Yes.
Auto Owen.
Engage Auto Owen. Yeah.
I was like the car from Knight Rider. I was in control.
I was like Luke when he fucking shuts his eyes and on the attack on the Death Star. I let the fucking Force take over, didn't I? I heard someone's voice in my head. I think it was Rafa Benitez. Oh no, it was Gerard Houllier saying, use the Force, Michael Owen.
As I got closer, I was always thinking a little ahead. As I was sprinting towards Ayala, of course, it would have been piss easy to just run past him. The risk was that going past him, I might take the ball too near to the corner flag. Conversely, if I took it too close to him, I'd be risking him nicking the ball or bringing me down. Whoa, it's getting very fucking precise here. Angles.
Can't believe he thought all these thoughts. He sat fucking writing this on YouTube.
He obviously did. He wouldn't lie, would he? He would try and make it sound like it was more complicated than it really was. It wasn't just run very fast and kick the ball very hard.
You'd feel shortchanged if you'd bought Michael Owen's book. And in 300 pages, the bit about his most famous goal just going, against Argentina, I got the ball, they stood off, so I just ran at them and fucking smashed it.
Kicked as hard as I
could. Bang! Goal.
Game over. Let's all have a disco. Angles and distance of touch became my sole focal points. Mm. What? Fuck off. I had to take it as close to him as I dared, but not so far away that I'd be making the finish too hard. This all happened in about 4.5 seconds, didn't it? When you watch it back. Fuck's sake.
He thinks he's in the Matrix.
Yeah, he does. Bless him. It's good. It's good entertainment, though. In a situation like this, you're weighing all this up subconsciously, but you're not aware that you are. It just happens. How do you know you are, then, if you're not aware that you are? What?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
You're talking in circles, man.
Yeah. You're a mess. And then he says, everyone always asks me about Schoolsy. Everyone? Really? Because if you watch the replay, he comes into view on my right-hand side. Honestly, it was never a question in my mind to pass to him. No one's ever asked him about Schoolsy. I don't remember seeing Schoolsy. I was focused solely on Michael Owen, running as fast as he can, and then kicking it as hard as he can.
Yeah, I think people see... people watch it on YouTube, maybe, and go, look at Schoolsy screaming for it.
Yeah.
But I don't remember that at all. I remember where I was, and I remember it being one of those cliches that you see in stupid adverts where they show lads watching the football, and they always show these lads reacting in a much more dramatic and excitable way than any real life lads ever do. They're always staring and gasping, and they slow it down, and there's a voiceover that's supposed to reflect the thoughts in their mind. Mm. And it goes back to that old thing that we've talked about when the Sky executives advertise football. It's always clearly made by people who have no real knowledge of or experience of football fan culture. So they go, oh, the thing about these fans is that to them, it is like watching, it's like how we would feel at the opera. It's their everything. They have small, irrelevant lives. Yeah. And yet in these small moments, they feel that nothing else matters apart from this absurd game that they have devoted their lives to, right? And in fact, all we're doing is sitting there, sort of chatting to our mate, eating some crisps, and then going, oh, goal. But in the case of the Michael Owen goal, I was like someone out of an advert, because I remember sitting on the sofa with a bunch of mates and all there, and literally... As he progressed from the halfway line, my arse came higher and higher out of the seat until the moment at which he shot, I'm fully erect. It was like the evolution of man.
Yeah.
And you're going, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Because there was a split second. I remember thinking, if he fucking finishes this... We've just watched the best goal ever. And when you finish it like that, we just fucking go mad, absolute mad. It was exactly how every football advert is based. It's the only time that's actually happened in real life.
Were you subconsciously thinking that, or were you consciously thinking that, or are you not sure?
I've broken it all down afterwards, because you have to understand, when those celebrations happen, Andy, you're not actually thinking anything. I went into automatic mode.
It's going to be a good chapter in your inevitable autobiography, I suppose.
Do you ever go into, when you're watching football, do you just like transfer into auto mode? Dawson?
Well, pretty much all the time.
Yeah.
I don't really give a fuck about football.
I like
much.
To live my whole life as auto Sam now, it's easier.
Yeah. That'd be good, wouldn't it?
Mm.
Well, we're going to leave it there. He's going to decide whether to pass it to Schoolsy or not.
We're leaving it on a cliffhanger.
We'll find out next week if he scores the goal or not.
Oh, that's exciting. That gives you a reason to tune in next week, listeners.
Sure does. All right, there we are. That's the Owen Odyssey. Thanks for listening.
TTFN dickheads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.